So welcome back, everybody. My name is Sue Zappel, and so the paramis, perfections of the heart. Lindell talked a little bit about how the paramis are what the Buddha was able to attain. It's the awakened heart. I also like how some of the Zen teachers talk about the perfections. They're part of our, they say that they're part of our vows as practitioners to follow the Eightfold Path, to do no harm. They're our intentions which guide us. And the perfection part is we don't always fulfill these vows. Sometimes we fall off the path, but then we come back, and the paramis act as kind of like our guiding star. Lindell already mentioned that the paramis are qualities that already exist in us. We don't have to go out and find them, because sometimes our ignorance or conditioning or the ways that our impulses and reactivity kind of adds to the suffering that we're experiencing. Sometimes that prevents the paramis from manifesting. So the more we practice, the more opportunities there are for the paramis to manifest. Their intentions for how we are in the world. We are relational beings. Norman Fisher, is a Zen teacher who often comes to visit us, says that for spiritual practitioners, that's us, life is the field of practice. And we try to master the art of living, and the paramis, these perfections of heart and mind, help us in this practice of mastering the art of living. When the evening is over, if you go to the resources page on the website, Lindell and I put together a chart that talks about all of the paramis. And this comes from one of the teachers, Ajahn Suchito, who talks about the paramis as inclinations or potentials that we develop in three stages. The first stage is setting the intention. The second is, he calls it gathering. And I see it as how we practice with the paramis and how we notice the resistance to them, or we notice when they're absent, and we persist. And basically, we fall down and we get back up again. And then the third stage is where there's balance has been found, like Lindell was talking about, that place of kind of equanimity. And in that stage, the paramis manifest really easily. They meet very little resistance. So as Lindell and I are talking tonight, we may mention the different stages, and maybe not, but you can look at that on the resources page. So tonight we're talking about these 10 perfections and how we are dealing with them in the world. I'm going to cover 5 of them, placing them mostly in the context of the world in relationship, kind of off the cushion. And then Lindell is going to be speaking more about 5 of them on the cushion. It's kind of an artificial separation. We could have done it some other way, but that's what we chose. And so because these are perfections of both the mind and heart, I really encourage you to listen with both your ears and your heart. So the ones I'm going to talk about are generosity, ethical conduct, renunciation, truthfulness, and kindness. Many of us have heard the story of when the Buddha first started teaching, and that his first teaching was the Four Noble Truths. But that's what he taught to others who were already on the spiritual path, some of the ascetics that he had been practicing with. When he continued to teach lay women and men like us, he connected with where people were in their lives and what level of understanding they had. So he started those teachings with generosity, ethical conduct, and renunciation. Generosity is the first one. One of our teachers, Winnie Nazarko, says that generosity is the action word that makes friendliness real. So when you think about friendliness, where you stand next to everyone. And you bring a heart full of friendliness. Leaning into generosity is really natural. That intention, that bringing friendliness to all. And we know that when we do that, everyone benefits, the giver and the receiver. And yet that second stage where we kind of notice some of the resistance, sometimes we have mixed intentions around giving. Maybe we're looking for acknowledgement of what a generous person I am, or wanting to make a really good impression, basically seeking some kind of return for our generosity and making the giving all about me. So watching out for our intentions is really an important part of nourishing this parami of generosity. There are three kinds of generosity: material things, teaching or inspiration, and the generosity of fearlessness. So the generosity about material things is really, I think, what most of us think about, and it's pretty easy to see and understand. And we know how good it feels when we are able to help out others, especially during this pandemic when we're so isolated. I know it's felt really good when you can like do shopping for somebody else or take food to someone who's stuck inside, or even giving some money to help out folks who are in need. The second kind of generosity, the generosity of teaching or inspiration, it's considered to be the greatest gift. And for 2,600 years, all of the teachings have been freely given. But generosity around teaching and inspiration doesn't mean that you have to become a Dharma teacher. It really means offering oneself and one's time to listen closely to what others are saying, where they're coming from, offering support and care, and perhaps sharing in your own words and in your own way how the Dharma is living out it in your own life. Going back to Norman Fisher, who's has a wonderful book on the paramis from the Zen perspective, and it's on our list of resources. He says the gift of fearlessness may seem an impossible gift to give, but you give it by giving love. Because when you feel loved, you feel confident. We give to others the sense that they really matter, that they're cared for and respected and secure within a loving reality. In that kind of environment, there is a moments of fearlessness. And it seems like in these times when there's so many difficulties, that kind of generosity seems more needed than ever. So the second parami is ethical conduct. Basically, what do you value and how much do you live according to those values? Certainly, it includes the precepts: refraining from taking life, refraining from taking what is not freely offered, speaking truthfully and kindly, refraining from misusing our sexual energies, and refraining from obscuring the mind with drugs, alcohol, too much social media, too much Netflix, and basically keeping a clear head. Ethical ground is the clear understanding that we are all in this together. We are truly interconnected. And certainly the pandemic has taught us that if we ever had any doubts. When we take the precepts on retreat, and we always do at the very first evening, the language we use is we undertake the training to do no harm, etc. We make our vows to undertake the training. And when we stray, which we often do, we make the vow again and again. And that kind of goes back to the idea that these paramis are perfections, that it's a perfection as in a verb of perfecting. Ethical conduct, living our values, is how we live a life of integrity. When we live our values, our life is aligned, and we offer to others that gift of safety that we can be trusted. So the third parami is renunciation, and often people go, I don't like that word, and it means that I'm going to have to give up everything I like and live like an ascetic. But really, renunciation It's like Lindell said in our guided meditation, it's about giving up our argument with the way things are. Giving up our argument with the way things are. Suzuki Roshi defines renunciation as accepting the fact of impermanence, that things of this world go away. In my breakout group, we all agreed that impermanence is a challenge for dealing with. Some teachers define renunciation as rest. And that's when I first saw that, I thought, well, that's kind of weird. But when you think about when we hold so tightly, not only we hold tightly how we want things to be, there's that tension that's built up inside of us. And so when we let it go and we let things be, that tension can dissipate and we can find some rest. So when you follow along with the first two paramis of generosity and ethical conduct, renunciation is really about abandoning the illusion of separateness. That we abandon that, we recognize how much we are all in this together. For me, when I've been working with that, the parami of renunciation, I've realized how much I lean forward it moment to moment, and I stop being fully inhabiting the moment that I'm in, that kind of belief that somehow the next moment's going to be better than what I'm in. Each of us might have our own way of understanding renunciation. The fourth one is truthfulness. So I've been in business a long time, and it used to be that a person's word, a handshake, was enough to make all kinds of transactions. So many years ago, my partner met this guy. I ran a recycling company, and he met this guy who ran a composting business, and he needed a truck. So Bill goes, well, I'll help you get a truck. And so we did. And it wasn't until almost 3 years later that we ever even learned this guy's last name. It was just, he was being honest. We were being honest. There was just an agreement that we would take care of each other. That kind of truthfulness engenders so much trust. If we believe others are telling the truth, and you know, we have to be discerning. You can't be foolish. But in many of our circles, we can believe that others are telling the truth. And then we tell the truth. It gives everyone the gift of a level playing field. We all know the same thing. Truthfulness isn't always easy. And sometimes we need to really have patience to see it. We have to dig through that rubble pile of beliefs and opinions and Facebook posts and whatever to find the truth of the moment, but it's really worth the effort. And that second stage of where the resistances come up, you know, there are these little fibs, these little white lies or rationalizations or ego protections or gossip. And we may find ourselves not telling the truth under the misguided intention to protect others. I grew up in a family where that's how the big lie started in my family. Once my mom told the big lie, she then had to keep adding more lies to it so that the first lie would continue to be believable. The truth came out 27 years later after the first lie. And the whole family was just devastated, disoriented. We thought, you know, is what we thought of as our childhood, was it even ever true? Those lies that started out kind of innocently out of the love of our mom to protect us really was unintended consequences from her place, but had some pretty awful consequences. I think we need to remember that people can handle the truth, especially when we practice wise speech and we remember to be kind and truthful and timely. And, you know, we think about it before we talk and we think why we're saying this. So we just figure it out and we tell the truth, period. The last one I'm going to talk about is kindness. I think every time last year during the teaching of the Eightfold Path, no matter what the fold was, to where we always started with do no harm. It was like we could have just said do no harm, you know, for 12 months. And it's that and it's more. Kindness is giving the others the benefit of the doubt, finding the good in others, even those who really irritate us or those with whom we really disagree. One of the teachers, Sylvia Boorstein, says that kindness must be the universal antidote to suffering. She says it's what everyone wants most. And we know that there are resistances to kindness too. You know, there are those people who, if you've ever read the Metta Sutta and it says omit none, well, there's those people on our omit list, you know. But there's also times when we omit ourselves, when we find it so hard to bring that kindness to ourselves. One of the teachers I listened to when preparing the talk talks about the parami as never turning your back on yourself. Or a poem that we recently read in one of the drop-in sits that said, blow kisses to yourself in the mirror, especially when you've messed up. So it's a nice reminder. I love that idea of blowing kisses to yourself. So kindness is seen as a spontaneous response of the heart. Many of us have had a kind of a rocky process in developing a strong metta practice, and that our hearts were kind of protected and armored. But as we tenderize, the kindness comes way more easily. So as Lindell continues with the final five, you'll see how all of these qualities of the heart are interconnected. Generosity, the action that brings kindness to life. Ethical conduct, which underscores all of the other qualities. Abandoning our argument with with reality, the renunciation. It's a core principle of the Dharma. Telling the truth and living a life of blamelessness. With all that is going on in the world, pandemic, widespread, wildfires, the destruction of lives and homes and animals and trees and birds and people's dreams, ongoing efforts for racial justice and huge amount of animosity and division. It's as if our world is screaming at us to practice the parami. So it's like there's this writing in the sky that says, okay, now's the time, practice these paramis. You know, we need thoughtful, awake people living their values, practicing generosity, renunciation, patience, kindness, truthfulness, doing it all with a balanced energy, coming from a place of wisdom. I believe that our lives and the lives of everyone else around us depend on us practicing together, practicing these paramis. Thanks for your attention.